Good morning. Today's Daf and Sanhedrin, Samech. We are in Antesimut Beis. Finishing up the sugya of Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach. Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach, a big sugya here in Sanhedrin. Starts all the way back on Nun Vav Amud Aleph, on the bottom of the Amud, where the Gemara introduced us to a Braisa that listed all Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach, seven Noachad laws. There are a couple of dissenting opinions in terms of what they are. Maybe some more laws to be added. Maybe some substitutions. We've been discussing that over the last number of days. We are now talking about repetition of a mitzvah, meaning a mitzvah was given to the world at large and then repeated at Mamad Har Sinai. So the Gemara gave us a rule, Rabbi Yossi. We saw the rule yesterday on Nun Tes Amud Aleph, towards the bottom of the Amud. And that is that if it was given to the world at large and not repeated by Mamad Har Sinai, it only applies to us. An example of that would be the Gidon Asha. Gidon Asha was only given to us in Parshas Vayishlach, and not repeated ever again in the Torah. So it was a mitzvah that was given, repeated at Mamad Har Sinai. And applies only to us. Now, the Gemara points out, by the way, that this is actually subject to a machlokas tanaim, whether or not the mitzvah of Gidon Asha applied even earlier or did not apply earlier. The Gemara here says that we're going aliba to Rabbi Yehuda. This is according to the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, who has us observing Gidon Asha even before Mamad Har Sinai. Okay, then the Gemara talked about mitzvahs that were in fact repeated, given to the world at large, and then repeated at Mamad Har Sinai. So what's the halacha over there? So that's what we're in the middle of discussing. So we are talking now about mitzvahs like Bris Milah, like Peruvu. So they were given to the world at large. Now I know Bris Milah is a little bit strange because the mitzvah of Bris Milah was not given to the world at large. It was given to Avram Avinu, but Avram Avinu was not a Jew. Avram Avinu was a Ben Noach. Obviously, he's a forefather, he's a patriarch. I mean, but still, he's a Ben Noach. And yet, the mitzvah of Bris Milah was repeated again. So, if there is a repetition of the mitzvah of Bris Milah, so now what? So now, does it apply universally, or does it apply only to us? Well, we know the conclusion. We know that the mitzvah of Bris Milah only applies to us. But it was given prior, it was given pre-Mamad Har Sinai. It was repeated by Mamad Har Sinai, and again, because we know that, because we have a pasuk in Parsha Shmini. So what do we say regarding Bris Milah? Similarly, the Mitzvah Peruvu was given universally. It's one of the mitzvahs. It's interesting that Peruvu did not make it into the list of Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. That in of itself is a point of interest. But it was given pre-Mamad Har Sinai, then repeated to us. So what do we say? Do we say that it's it now should apply only to the Jewish people, should it apply universally? So this is what is under investigation in the Gemara. We're right in the middle of this discussion. And the Gemara, let's start off towards the top of the Amud, on Nun Tes Amud Beis, where the Gemara entertains these discussions. The Gemara says, I'm going to start right from the top, Vahare Mila, on Nun Tes Amud Beis. All the way on the top. We did some of this yesterday, but it's really the beginning of the sugya, or the beginning of this section, I should say. So the Gemara says, now, it was repeated, and yet it applies to only the Jews, but not to Bnei Noach. So the Gemara says, yeah, but the repetition over there is not to reintroduce us to the mitzvah. The repetition over there is to give us a specific point of a halacha, and that is that if the eighth day falls out on Shabbos, you're still going to do the mitzvah of Bris Milah, even though it will be a violation of Shabbos. So what about the mitzvah of Peruvu, which was repeated to us? And the Gemara assumes that it only applies, the mitzvah now only applies to us, it doesn't apply to the Noachites. It is interesting that there is, how does the Gemara know that? How does the Gemara know that the mitzvah Peruvu only applies to us now? Now to Noachites, see the top Tosfos who grapples with that question. But in the meantime, however, Gemara is bothered by the fact that, how come it only applies to us? Don't we have a repetition? And didn't we say that when there's a repetition, it applies both to Jew and non-Jew alike? So the Gemara says, so the Gemara says like this, you know, the truth of the matter is that it's not a repetition of the Pasuk. The reason why the Torah had to say, after Mamad Har Sinai, Shuvu lachem lo aleichem, is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu by Mamad Har Sinai gave us a ban of being with our wives. Then, after Mamre Har Sinai, the ban had to be lifted. That's why there's a pasuk over there. It's not for the general mitzvah peruvu. It's to lift the ban. The Gemara says, if this is all true, so the Gemara says, well, once you have this basic idea that the repetition of the pasuk is not giving us a new reintroduction to the mitzvah, but just there to teach us a specific point, why don't you always say that? So the Gemara says, so the Gemara says, no. If the Torah is introducing us, reintroducing us to the mitzvah in totality, so why is the Torah doing that? It must be doing that to tell us that the mitzvah only applies, applies to both us and to Noachides as well. So the Gemara says, now, as far as a mitzvah that's not repeated, so that is the Gedan Asher, like we said earlier. So the Gemara says, well, no. In other words, vis-a-vis other mitzvahs, it was repeated again in the Torah. Vis-a-vis the mitzvah of Gedan Asher, it was never stated again. The Gemara now is going to go back and revisit the question that we asked in the beginning of this year today. The mitzvah of Mila stated to Avram Avinu, which was pre-Sinai, meaning Noachide, and then repeated again after Mamre Har Sinai. And again, the Gemara's question was, well, once there's repetition, doesn't it apply to everybody? The Gemara's first answer was, well, the repetition was not real repetition. It was just there to introduce us to a prat, to a detail within the mitzvah of Mila. Now the Gemara is suggesting a totally new answer, and that is that when the mitzvah was originally presented to Avram Avinu, it was meant not for the Noachide community, it was meant only for us Jews. And the Gemara now is going to cite the Psukim, and I'm going to just reread that last line again. The mitzvah of Mila was only given to Avram Avinu, not intended for the world to do. Nobody else. Gemara says, so the Gemara says, okay, I hear you, but the Bnei Yishmael should get a bris mila. Now it happens to be the Bnei Yishmael do get a bris mila. But in other words, but what the Gemara is saying is that it should be done as a mitzvah, meaning because it says that the children of Avraham, and of course Yishmael being one of his children. So the Gemara says, ki bi Yitzchaki karelecha zera. The Gemara says, yeah, that's true, but Kadosh Baruch Hu made it clear that as far as the lineage is concerned, as far as the Mesorah is concerned, it goes through Yitzchak, not through Yishmael. So Bnei Esav l'chayvu. So the Gemara says, okay, but the Bnei Esav should be chayv in the mitzvah of Bris Milah, as they too now are the progeny of Avram, and they're coming out through Yitzchak as well. So the Gemara says, be Yitzchak v'lo kol Yitzchak. Part of Yitzchak, not all of Yitzchak, is going to be chayv in this mitzvah. And so Yitzchak had two sons, so only one of those two. Maskev l'revoshi alamiyata b'nei keturah nami. Sorry. B'nei keturah lo l'chayvo. So the Gemara says, what about the b'nei keturah? We know after the death of Sarah, so Avra marries Keturah. Now Rashi brings down over there, Keturah could be Hagar. Keturah could be someone else as well. But in other words, the b'nei keturah, the children of Keturah, where at the end of Parshas Chayisara, the Torah lists a number of descendants that come out through Avram and Keturah. So now what the Gemara is suggesting is that they should not be chayv in the mitzvah of Bris Milah, because as we just got done saying, only Avraham through Yitzchak, through Yaakov. So the Gemara says, no. Hamar Rabbi Yossi bar Avin v'tim, Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Chanina, es brisi efar. L'rabos b'nei Keturah. So the Gemara says that there's a special ribui for the b'nei Keturah that they need to get a Bris Milah. Now there's a special ribui for the b'nei Keturah, and that applies to them or their descendants as well. Look at the Rashi over here. The Rabbah is B'nai Keturah. Rashi writes, I'm reading the Rashi inside. Osam shisha levadam v'lo zara'am. So there's a ribui, but only for the direct descendants of Avram to get a bris milah. Rashi's opinion is that any future generation do not need to get a bris milah of the B'nai Keturah. Ava Avram nitzav l'chol hanola dimlo. As far as Avram is concerned, so for Yitzchak, for Yaakov, and for all future generations, they have a mitzvah. For the B'nai Keturah, it's only for the B'nai Keturah themselves. I encourage you to take a look at the Rambam. The Rambam does not agree with Rashi. The Rambam is of the opinion that the B'nai Keturah need to get a bris milah, them and their future descendants as well. See the Rambam for a different opinion. Back to the Gemara. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav Adam Arisha, Lohuta lo basa l'achila. Adam was not allowed to eat meat. Adam Arishon, the first vegetarian. The first man, first vegetarian. not allowed to eat meat. It is a curiosity, which the Gemara does not bring up as a question, but it's a really simple question. If, like we said a couple of days ago, the mitzvah Shev Mitzvahs B'nei Noach were introduced to Adam HaRishon, which seems to be the simplest approach of the Gemara that we've seen the last number of days, so one of the Shev Mitzvahs B'nei Noach is Avraham Menachem. If Adam HaRishon was a vegetarian, and that was the original divine plan to be a vegetarian, so then what's the Isser of Avraham Menachem? It's such a simple question. The Gemara does not raise that question. Okay, it demands an answer. The Rishonim give answers. I'm going to go on in the Gemara. But it's something to think about. Homework, if you will. Dichziv, lachem yalachol chayas ha'aretz v'lo chayas ha'aretz lachem. You and the animals are going to be eating all this fruit and vegetation. Right? It's beautiful. It's delicious. You and the animals are going to eat it, but that's it. Meaning, but you can't eat the animals. So Adam HaRishon was banned from eating animals. Ukshaba b'nei Noach chiter lahem. Shenem kiyarek esav nasati lachem es kol. So I gave you all the vegetation. So yachlo ye ever menachai no egg bo. Gemara has an unbelievable havamina. Well, once meat now is permitted to Noach, well, maybe so is ever menachai. Meaning because Noach now is going to consume something that historically has never been consumed, meat. So now what the Gemara is suggesting is that maybe the ban of ever menachai, the iser of ever menachai, was lifted towards Noach. So the Gemara says that's why the Torah reintroduces Avraham Menachai to tell Noach, look, you're allowed to eat meat, but you're not allowed to eat Avraham Menachai. Yachol af l'shratzim, Tamal Amar, ach. So now, what about sheretz? Can Noach rip off a limb of a sheretz? And yes, Noach can because the Torah says ach. Ach is always a miyut, it always is a limitation. So that means that the Isra of Avraham Menachai applies to most of the animal world, but it does not apply to the shratzim. On my Talmud, another Gemara says, now how did the Braisa know that? How did the Braisa arrive at that conclusion? Am Rav Huna damo, misha damo chalok mi besaro, yatsu shosim shein damo chalok mi besaro. A point that we made earlier just a couple days ago, we're making now again, and that is when it comes to an animal, the flesh and the blood of the animal are two separate entities and have two different halachic statuses. However, as it relates to a sheretz, to anything that crawls on the ground, so the blood and the flesh of a sheretz are one in the same. They are not two separate entities. They do not have two separate statuses. That's true in the world of Tumah Tahara. And now that's also going to be true vis-a-vis the Isser of Avraham Menachai. That if you rip off the limb of a sheretz, that for a Ben Noach would be acceptable. That would be allowable. For you and I, obviously, the sheretz is not kosher to begin with. But for a Ben Noach who's allowed to eat the sheretz, he's also allowed to rip the limb off of an animal. So I'm not sure if... I'm just thinking out loud right now. I'm not sure if the crab is a sheretz, right? I know it's in the water, but there's also a shratzim of the water as well. But in other words, but the guy with the Ben Noach would be allowed to rip off the leg of the crab and eat, you know, fresh crab legs torn right off. But again, that's only assuming that the crab isn't considered a sheretz. All right, so what do we have right now? The Gemara has an assertion that Adam HaRishon did not eat meat.
Rabbi, in the explanation, it said that if
right. That's one answer. That's one approach.
But, yes.
Right? That's Rashi. Right? He quotes Rashi for that, right?
Right. It doesn't say Rashi.
Okay. I think that's one approach.
Yes, Rashi, yes.
Okay, fine.
Good.
Good. Okay, very good. Okay. So, Meisvein, the Gemara challenge is based on a Braisa. Uridu b'tagasayam. So, we are going to have dominion. Adam HaRishon is having dominion over the fish. So my love, la'achila. Now dominion, what does that mean? Doesn't it mean that Adam is allowed to eat the fish? The Gemara says, lo la malacha. No. He's only allowed to use fish in order to do work for him. V'dagim b'nei malacha ninu. Really? And we're going to harness the power of the fish? The Gemara says, sure. In. Kidirachva debay rachva hinig ba'aza v'shavuta. Mai. You hitch your plow to a goat and to a fish. I have this picture of a canal running right along the field. And in the canal, you have this very powerful and strong fish. It's called the shibuta. I can't identify now. But basically now, you hitch your plow to the animal that's standing on the bank of the canal and to the fish that's in the canal. And with the power of the two, they're going to pull your plow. And is that going to be an issue of kalayim?
Yeah.
Okay, because we know that kalayim not only is the crossing of different animals, but it's also hitching your plow to do two different animals. According to the Shita of the Rambam, by the way, the Isser of working two different animals is only when the two different animals are kosher and non-kosher. Interesting opinion of the Rambam. Anyway, Tashma. My lab la'achila lo lamlacha. Again, the same question. Adam Arishon was supposed to have dominion over the animals of the air, or what we would call birds. And doesn't that mean that Adam is allowed to eat them? The Gemara says, no, he's only allowed to work them. V'ofos b'nei malachaninu in k'dabai rabban. Again, by Rav Huna. Again, the Gemara says, can you harness the power of the birds to work for you? The Gemara says, sure. Dash b'ivzim v'tarnigon l'Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda mai. The Gemara over here has a very specific question. It's really a Bab Metzia question. You have your geese and your chicken, and they are threshing out in the field. So are they allowed to eat? Is there an isser of muzzling them? Is the isser of muzzling only applied to animals that have that walk on four legs? Or is the isser of muzzling also going to be on animals with two legs? There are more details to this particular halacha over here. See Rashi, and see the Gemara in Bam Metzia for more details right now. But for our purposes right now, the Gemara is just simply deflecting by saying, yes, Adam is allowed to harness the power of the bird, but no, Adam is not allowed to eat the bird. Tashma. What about also the animals? Now, as far as Chai is concerned, so Adam Arishon is going to be harnessing the power of the Chayos, and including that are the snakes. Now, it's interesting. I thought in my head, I have this idea that snakes are really shrotzim, meaning they're on the ground. But at the same time, I'm also reminding myself that the snakes used to walk on four legs. So that's why the Gemara here puts that into the category of Chaya. I think. I'm not sure if what I'm saying is correct, but it sounds right. We could have had the snakes working for us, and it would have been wonderful, says the Gemara. Had it not been for the sin of the snake, what would have happened is that two snakes would have been used as employment for every Jew. One snake walking to the north and the other one to the south. And the snakes would be mining for us precious stones. We would have literally harnessed the snake, and the snake would have gardened for us, right? The garden snake, exactly. Very good. Meitzvei. Hayu Rabbi Yehuda ben Tema Omer Adam Rishon Meitzvei began Eden Hayu Vayu Malach Esher Tzolim Babasur Misanal Yayin. The Brice over here has a description provided to us by Rabbi Yehuda ben Tema. Adam Rishon lounging in the Gan Eden, Malachi Ashares serving him meat, bringing him wine. It sounds nice. He says, "Bo nachash v'ra bechvodu v'niskanebo." Snake sees it, and the snake gets jealous. Clearly, this picture that we just described of Adam Arishon clearly is eating meat, and this goes against our premise that Adam Arishon did not eat meat. Hasam bebasar yorim neshamayim. The Gemara says that meat was not coming from the ground. The meat descended from heaven. Umiika basar yorim min hashamayim in. And the Gemara says, is that so? And the Gemara says, yep, it is. Ki hadu Rabbi Shimon ben Chalafta avakaza ba'orcha pagu ba'hanacha evaisa davuka na'am el ape. Gemara tells the story of Rabbi Shimon ben Chalafta who met into two lions who roared at him. Amar akfirim shawagim latarif. He quotes the pasuk from Tehillim, pasuk that we say every Rosh Chodesh. And must be they're hungry. Nachisu leitarti amtasa chada achlua chada shavkua. So what happened is two big meats, pieces of meat descended from heaven. One was torn and eaten by the lions, which of course spared his life. And after that, they were full. They didn't eat the second piece of meat. Isavasala Bay Medrasha. He takes the second piece of meat and brings it to the base medrash. By Allah, davar tame huzeh or davar tahor? Kosher or not kosher? Amalei in davar tame yorei mina shamayim. It's kosher. Something is not coming down from heaven and is going to be not kosher. It is illogical. The Gemara says, "By mine Rabbi Zer, Rabbi Abba, Yardolo demus chamor mahu." What if what descended from heaven took on the shape of a donkey? Donkey, of course, is a non-kosher animal. So now we have two principles that are arguing with one another. One is that nothing non-kosher is coming from heaven. On the other hand, shaped like a donkey. Amr le yarod naala. When Rabbi Abba received this question, Rabbi Zera. Just sheer frustration. Like, what kind of question is that? Now, Yarod Na'ala, Tanin Shoteh, right? You are just you'll forgive me, I'm just translating the words literally, you're a stupid snake, right? A stupid serpent. Meaning, now it's, He got frustrated when asked this question. So it's like one of those questions which are like more philosophical than it is halachic. And whatever, he clearly got frustrated. So ha'amrilei in davatama yarim min ha'shamayim. Meaning, go back to what I said originally. Nothing kosher is dropping down from heaven. It's not happening. Your question is just, I'm not entertaining your question. Okay. Right. I'm just. We'll leave it at that. Okay. We are now winding down. It's been a while. The whole Ben Noach sugya started on Nun Vav Amud Aleph. We are now about to turn the page to the beginning of Samach, today's daf, and the Gemara is finally winding down on this discussion. So that means that Nun Vav, Nun Zayin, Nun Ches, Nun Tes. So it is four dapim. Okay, half of Nun Vav, but still. Four dapim dedicated in Shas to the topic of Ben Noach. The Gemara now is winding down as it's reviewing a couple of the fringe opinions regarding the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach. Rabbi Shimon Omer Af Ala Kishav. So Rabbi Shimon says that sorcery is also considered one of the Isurim of the Ben Noach. He added that to the list. My Tamad Rabbi Shimon Dechsiv, we are on the very top of Samach Amud Aleph. Micha Shefa Lo Sechaya. So the Torah says that a sorcerer is not to be left alive, meaning that is a capital crime with a capital punishment. Now, obviously, this is talking about for the Jews. It's part of the Torah. Uksiv kol shochev im be'ema mosimas. And right next to it is the pasuk regarding the isser of bestiality. So kol sheyeshem bechlal kol shochev im be'ema yeshem bechlal mechashev alo sechaya. So now with this hekesh, with the smuchim, with the two pasukim next to one another, so whoever is under one isser is going to be under the other isser as well, as we already established in yesterday's daf, 2 days ago really, daf nun ches. We've already established that Arayus is usher to the Ben Noach. Included in the Isser Arayus, according to everybody, is bestiality. So we know that the Ben Noach is included in bestiality, and since the Pasuk of Mechashefa is right next to the Pasuk of Shochev Behema, so therefore they're going to be included as well. Interesting that the Gemara does not give us the counter argument of the Tanakhama. The Tanakhama does not agree with this. The Tanakhama does not include Mechashefa as one of the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach, or added to the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach, and the Gemara does not give the counter argument. I would offer as a suggestion, I am simply speaking my mind. I don't have a source for this, to be clear. But I'm going to offer as a suggestion that this idea that we're learning a halacha for Bnei Noach from Smuchim is one of the methodologies that we use in order to extract halacha. Right? Smuchim means two psukim next to one another. Right, similar to a hekesh, very similar to the idea of a hekesh. And I'm offering as a suggestion that maybe these methodologies that we have are specific towards extracting halacha for us. But these methodologies are not going to be used in order, in terms of extracting halacha for Ben Noach. I say that as a suggestion, and it could be right. Could be. Rabbi Lazar Omer Af Ala Klein, continuing in the Gemara. Rabbi Lazar says it applies also to Klein as well, meaning Kalaim is one of the Isurim as it relates to the Bnei Noach. Rabbi Lazar adds that to the list. Mena Nimili Amashmo Amakra. Es Chukosai Tishmaru. The Pasuk, when introducing us to the Isur of Kalaim, it opens up with a phrase that's an unusual phrase. Now, the words themselves appear in the Torah many times. But the phrase itself, Es Chukosai Tishmaru, it's unusual. And the way Rabbi Lazar understands it is, Chukim Shechakak Lecha Kvar, that these are prohibitions that already were legislated earlier in history, notably Bnei Noach. Bam techalos, Rabia Kalayim, Sad Chalos, Israel Kalayim, and then we're just reading on in the Pasuk. You're not allowed to cross animals and plants. Ma bam techabaharva, Sad Chabaharva. Now, how do you cross animals? By having different animals mate with one another. So too, Afsad Chabar Kava. So therefore, that means that in the field, we're talking about grafting. We're talking about taking one tree, tying it to another tree in order to graft a new plant. And by when it comes to the animals are not tluyos ba'aretz, it's not agricultural. So the iser of harkava as it relates to an animal applies both in and out of Eretz Yisrael. Same thing is true with grafting. An iser that applies both in and outside of Eretz Yisrael as well. Ela me'atza, the Gemara says, so, you're telling me that the reason why, according to Rabbi Eliezer, the Isser of Kalaim applies to Bnei Noach is because of the phrase, Es Chukosai Tishmaru. Why don't we consider the following? Mishmartim Es Chukosai Ves Mishpatai. You're going to follow my Chukos, my Mishpatim. This Pasuk is said regarding the Torah in general. This actually is the Pasuk of Vechai Bahem. Chukim Shechakak Lech Kvar. And why don't we interpret it the same way that we interpret the pasuk regarding klayim, that they were given historically at an earlier period of time, and therefore the Torah should apply to Bnei Noach as well. The Gemara says no. Hasam ushmartem eschukosai dahashta. When the Torah uses the phrase ushmartem eschukosai, means that these are the chukos that I legislated now. Hacha eschukosai tishmaru. But here it says that my chukos you're going to guard, meaning my chukos that already existed you're going to guard regarding kalayim. Chukim de mikara tishmaru. So the Gemara says that if you look at the psukim technically from a syntax standpoint, the pasuk in Kalayim seemingly is referring to an early point in time. Again, same story, by the way, over here. The Gemara does not tell us what the Tanakhama is going to do with that pasuk, because clearly the Tanakhama does not agree with Rabbi Eliezer. Okay, and again, that requires also more analysis. Why would the Tanakhama not agree with Rabbi Eliezer? We continue in the Gemara. Amar Yeshua Mekarach Amar Rav Acha Bar Yaakov Einu Chayv Ad Sheyavarech Shem Ben Arba Osios. Here we go again back to the Isra of Giduf. We are done with the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. The Gemara went on a long tangent, as I went over already. But now, we return back to the Mishnah that started on the bottom of Nun Hamun Beis, and the Isser of Giduf, the Isser of Blasphemy. And once again, now the Gemara is going to do a deeper dive into the Isser of Giduf. Amar Vachar Yaakov Enochai Vashivach Shem Ben Arba Osios. In order to violate blasphemy from a capital punishment standpoint, one has to be megayed if one has to blaspheme using the name of Hashem that's four letters. Lafuka ben shei osios to lo. And this excludes the name of Hashem that only has two letters. Pshita. Yaki yosi yosi tanan. Now the Gemara says, now when you look back at the Mishnah, remember, in the course of deliberation and the original presentation of the witnesses who are testifying that they heard blasphemy, they're not going to say Shem Hashem, but they're going to slap a euphemism to Shem Hashem, so they don't have to actually say Shem Hashem for no reason. And they're going to say Yake Yosi es Yosi. Yosi is a euphemism for Shem Hashem. So now the word Yosi, as we already pointed out, it's got four letters, just like Shem Hashem has four letters. So from the Mishnah, isn't this point already clear? Answers the Gemara. The Gemara says, I would have maybe suggested that the Mishnah's usage of the word Yosi is just a euphemism, not to be understood super literally. Well, it's got four letters, therefore Giduf is only for four letters. That's the Havamina. Igadami Amar Rav Acha Bar Yaakov Shmamina Shem Ben Arba Osios Nami Shemhu. The Gemara over here in the second version, similar to the first version, but with one notable difference. Over here, the four-letter name of Hashem is also subject to Giduf, meaning the larger 42 name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, 42 letter name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm not familiar with. Happens to be that haven't met anyone who's familiar with it. It happens to be that Rashi also does not know. Rashi over here doesn't point it out, but Rashi elsewhere in Shas, I don't remember the daf, but Rashi elsewhere in Shas also points out that he does not know what the 42 letter name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. Okay, so I think it's fair to say that we don't have the Masorah. There may be Anshei Segula who know. But generally speaking, we don't know. But that is a name of Hashem, the 42-letter name of Hashem. And in the second version, and even the four-letter name of Hashem is subject to the capital punishment for blasphemy. Pshita Yaki Yosi is Yosi Tanan. Now the Gemara says, what about the Mishnah, who says Yaki Yosi is Yosi using a four-letter name? So Mao Detema Adi Ika Shem Rabba Umilsa Ba'alma Hudanaka Kamashmalan. The Gemara says, again, the Mishnah is not compelling. I could have made the argument, that in order to be chay of misa for Giduf, one would have to blaspheme the full 42-letter name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Mishnah using the word Yosi, it's just milsa ba'alma. The Mishnah is just using an example. Nigmar Hadin. We're finishing up now the sugya of Giduf. We are now describing where, at the point now of Gemar Din, where the judges are looking towards a guilty verdict. So Omdim Minalan. So as the witnesses themselves now are going to have to, for the first and last time, actually pronounce Shem Hashem. Because you cannot kill somebody unless the judges heard exactly what the person said. And up until the Gemara Din, we spoke in euphemisms. But now, before the actual conviction, so the judges have to actually hear what was pronounced. So first, they stand. Om Diminala. How do we know that? How do we know that they have to stand to hear Shem Hashem? I'm Rav Yitzchak Bar Ami Amakra Ve'ed Ba Elav V'Yoshev Baliyas Mekare Asher Lo Levado V'Yomer Eyu Devar Lo Kim Li Elecha V'Yakam Me'al Hakise. So the Eyud and Shimon ben Gera. Eyud was the king of Moab. Sorry, let me do that again. Let me do that better. Eyud, sorry, was the Navi, was the Shofet, and he met with Eglon, Melech Moab. Eglon Melech Moab, the Navi over there describes as being a balbuster. He was very, very large, very obese. And what Eyud was going to do, I confused Eyud ben Gera and Shimon ben Gera. Sorry. Anyway, what Eyud was going to do is that he was going to have Eglon stand up, and he was going to take a sword and stab it into him. If I remember correctly, left-handed. Right? That's why it came as a surprise. But anyway, v'lo dvarim kavachomer ma Eglon Melech Moav shu nachri v'lo yada ala bikinui amad Yisrael v'shem ha-mefarash al-achas kama v'chama. Now look, Eglon's a non-Jew. And he didn't even hear Shem Hashem proper, meaning he heard a subordinate name. He heard Elohim. And he stood. So, imagine now where everything gets ramped up, where it's a Jew pronouncing the name, and he's pronouncing the Shema Miyuchad, so of course you have to stand. Korin Minalan. Now, when they hear Giduf, they tear Kriya. How do I know that? Dechsiv Ayavo, Liakim Ben Chilkiel, Vishevna, Hasofer, Vioch Ben Asaf, Hamazkir, El Chiskiel, Kurui Begadim, Viagidolo is Divrei Rav Shake. So there was an individual living in the time of Chiskiel, his name was Rav Shake. As the Gemara later on will point out, he was a Jew, he was a Mumar, and he blasphemed. And they are now going over to Chizkiyahu to report that which they heard, and their clothing was torn. Why were the clothing torn? Because they already heard the blasphemy, and they tear clothing as a response to hearing the Giduf. Lo ma'achin. You tear it, and you don't stitch it up. Minala namar Rabbi Abba, wasa kriya kriya, ksivacha kriya begadnu, ksivhasam ve'alisha roahu, v'hu mitzaik avi avi rechev Yisrael parsho, v'lo ru'uod ve'yichazek be'begadim ve'kar'em lishnayim. When Elisha ascends up to Shemayim, when Eliyahu ascends up to Shemayim, so Elisha seeing him, and Elisha says, Rechev, Rechev, right, Avi, Avi, Rechev Yisrael. And he didn't see Eliyahu anymore, and what he did is he did Kriya. So now it says, Vayikareim l'shnayim, he tore into two pieces. Kiraim imash b'shenemar veikarim l'shnayim eni yodeh she'en kiraim atam alam kiraim malam she'en kiraim le'olam. It's to tell us that it was torn, and it was torn, and not to be, and the Torah says shnayim, meaning, and it wasn't mended. Continuing the Gemara, Tanu Rabbanan, Echad Shomei Vechad Shomei Mipi Shomei Chayv Lekra. If you hear the actual blasphemy itself, if you hearsay, meaning you heard it from somebody who heard it from the person, so in either event, there's a mitzvah to do kriya, to tear. Va'idam Echayav Lekra Shekvar Karu B'Shar Shashama. Now the witnesses themselves don't need to tear kriya again because they heard it when they already did kriya when they heard it originally. And the Gemara says V'Chikar B'Shar Shashama Omay Havi Akashama Hashta. Gemara says, I don't understand that argument. Meaning, okay, you're right. They heard the original blasphemy and they did Kriya. But when they're in Basin and when they have to repeat it again, so I don't understand. In other words, what would seem reasonable is that they should have to do Kriya once again. The Dayanim for sure have to do Kriya as they're hearing this now for the first time. But even the Edim, even though it's repetition, shouldn't they have to do Kriya again? So the Gemara says, Lo Sakadacha. Again, we're going to go back to the Psukim regarding Chizkiyahu. And we're going to see that for repetition of the blasphemy, one does not need to do kriya. Let's revisit those psukim. Vayi kishmo amel chizkiyahu, vayi kara es begadav, hamel chizkiyahu kara vehem lo karu. The simple reading and a careful reading of the pasuk would seem to indicate that it was only chizkiyahu who was doing kriya when he heard the blasphemy, even though the witnesses themselves also hearing their own testimony, but still do not have to do kriya. Okay, so the Gemara does not give a svara, but the Gemara just simply says that you do not have to do kriya again when you're repeating the blasphemy. I'm Rav Yehuda Meshmo, Shomea Az Kara Mipi Ahove Kochavim Eino Chayv Lekra. According to Rav Yehuda Meshmo, if you hear a non-Jew saying Shem Hashem in a blasphemous manner, you don't have to do kriya. V'im tomer Rav Shakei. Now, what about Rav Shakei? So Yisrael Mumer Haya. He was not Jewish. He was Jewish, but he was a Mumer. V'am Rav Yudam Rishmol ain't korin ella al shema miyucha belvad lafuku kinu idolo. And the Gemara quotes in the name of Shmuel that one only needs to do kriya when he hears blasphemy using the Shema Miyuchad, not any one of the subordinate names. Now, these two positions of Rabbi Yehuda Mishmuel, the Gemara now notes, is not universally agreed upon. Upligid Rabbi Chia b'Tarvai. Rabbi Chia argues on two points. Am Rabbi Chia Shemaya Azkar b'Zman Azein Uchav Lekro. She'im Iyata Omerkein Nismale Kol Abege Kriyim. Rabbi Chia has a very interesting opinion. Nowadays, when we hear any kind of blasphemy out of the mouths of a, he doesn't actually articulate it out of whose mouths, the Gemara in a moment will point out, but nowadays when you hear blasphemy, you do not need to do kriya. Unfortunately, nowadays it is so common and so prevalent that we'd be walking around all day in tattered clothing. And every new piece of article of clothing that we'd put on, we'd end up having to rip, because we're going to hear blasphemy at one point or another during the day. Now, Miman. Now the Gemara says, let's seek clarification on this point. Who's the one pronouncing the blasphemy? Elema Yisrael mi pekiriku lehai. Now over here, the Gemara says, I will not entertain. Well, the Gemara did entertain. But there's no way I'm really going to think that it's Jews. Jews do not exist with that kind of hefkeris, where they're just blaspheming all day. So the people who are going to be blaspheming all day are the non-Jews. Now they don't know the Shema Miyuchad. And as I pointed out earlier, neither do I. But they don't know the Shema Miyuchad. So so what are they doing? So they're blaspheming on a pretty regular basis, not using the Shema Miyuchad, but rather using a subordinate name. And yet, what did Rabbi Chiya say? And Rabbi Chia says that only as a concession, that nowadays it's so prevalent, therefore no kriya has to be done. But may ikar hadin, according to the strict letter of the law, kriya really should be done. Even though, let's go over both points, it's coming out of the mouth of a non-Jew, and two, is that it's not an actual shema miyucha, but it's a subordinate name. Even though those two factors exist, nevertheless, me'ikra din kriya has to be done. So you see that Rabbi Chia does not agree with Rabbi Yehuda Mishmo. Hashini omer afani kamo. Now, what did the second witness say after the first witness actually repeated word for word the blasphemy at the Gemara din? What does the second witness say? Basically, he throws up a big ditto. What does the third witness say? Also, ditto. What he said, pointing to the first witness. Am Reish Lakish Mamina. Reish Lakish says, what do we see from here? What we see from here is that af ani kamohu kasher b'dine mamros v'dine nefashos. That really, according to the strict letter of the law, the second witness does not actually have to give his actual testimony, but he heard what the first witness said, and he can let out a big ditto, right? What he said, and that would be sufficient, and that would be good. Umalu d'avad rabbanan. However, in the general judicial process, the Chachamim instituted a chumra, which is that the second witness should articulate exactly what happened, even though he doesn't have to, even though just a simple ditto would suffice. But the Chachamim legislated as a chumra that the second witness should pronounce everything that actually happened. Hacha, Kevin de Loafsher, Ukma Rabbanan Adaraisa. Over here, when it comes to blasphemy, we are going to dispense with the Chumra de Rabbanan, and we're going to go back to the Iker Halacha, which is that the second witness only need just simply say ditto. The Isa Gadacha Pasal Hacha Mishum de Loafsher Kalin Lagavra. The Gemara says, because look, if you think that saying ditto according to the Torah is possible, so that means then that we would not be killing somebody on a ditto. It must be that according to the strict letter of the law, ditto for the second and third witnesses is sufficient. It's going to be good. And finally, just finishing up the whole sugya, the Mishnah introduced a third witness. Now, we don't really need a third witness, meaning a person will be put to death over the testimony of two witnesses. Why did the Mishnah also say, and if there's a third witness, he can also say ditto? So the Gemara says that's a shout out to Rabbi Akiva. meaning that our Mishnah is giving a stam position like Rabbi Akiva, that a third witness is going to be treated like the second witness. And as we learned already a number of times, but we get to say it again now as well, that means that once you have three witnesses in the kat, so now if I lose the third witness, I lose the entire case. Meaning even though I have two kosher witnesses that are left over, but a third witness is part now of the group, so the entire testimony will ride with the third and will go down with the third as well. In other words, it's all considered one kat, it's all considered now one group. Samach Amud Beis. We start now the next Mishnah and the next Sugya. Again, remember, where are we contextually? In the seventh parak of Sanhedrin, listing the 18 Yisurim in the Torah where one is going to be subject to not only the death penalty, but specifically Skila. Now in this Mishnah, we're going to go on to the next of the Averis that one is going to be subject to Skila, and that's Avodah Zarah. And over here for the next four Blad of Gemara, the rest of today's Daf, Samach Aleph, Samach Beis, Samach Gimel, and part of Samach Dalid, so we spent time discussing some of the basic halachas regarding Avodah Zarah. Let's start with the Mishnah. Ha'oved Avodah Kochavim. If you serve Avodah Zarah, Echad Ha'oved. Now, the Mishnah starts off with a very ambiguous term, if you serve it. Stay tuned as we're going to discuss exactly what that means. Echad HaMizabeach. You offer an animal to the Avodah Zarah. Echad HaMikater. You offer, you burn. You burn the carbon to the animal. I'm sorry, towards the avodah zarah. Echad haminasech, you pour libation towards the avodah zarah. Echad hamishtachaveh, you bow to the avodah zarah. Echad hamikablo alav leloka, you accept it as a deity. I'm sorry. Let me pronounce it better. Hamikablo alav leloha, right? Because we're not talking about a kadosh baruch. We're talking about a deity, lowercase d. Hamakabal alav laloha. Va'omer lo eli ata. You point to the Avodah Zarah and you say that you are my God. Okay. Under these circumstances, not only are all these examples of Avodah Zarah, but with a capital punishment. Contrast that to the upcoming cases. Aval. Hamagafif, if you hug the idol. Hamanashik, you kiss it. Hamachabit, you sweep in front of it. Hamarabit, it's another form of sweeping. Sprinkling water in front of it. Hamirachetz, you bathe the idol. Hasach, you anoint oil on the idol. Hamalbish, you dress it. Manil, you put shoes on it. Over below sase, so it is a negative prohibition of idolatry, but it is not going to be subject to the death penalty. The Gemara is going to tell us why that should be. What are the sources for this? Hanod b'shmo v'amekayim b'shmo over below sase. If you make a neder, using the Avodah Zarah as your deity, I swear in the name of lowercase d, so then that also is a law, it's a negative prohibition, not subject to the capital punishment. Ha'por atzmo la'bal pa'or zui avodah sa. Now, there's a certain idol called Baal Pa'or, where the way that you worship it is defecation. You defecate in front of it. Ha'zorik evan la'markula zui avodah sa. And there's another idol that was popular back then, probably relate to the Greek god Mercules, where you stack stones, two stones on the ground, one stone on top of it, so it's basically a pyramid of three stones. And then what you do is you take a step back and you pelt it with stones. Now, the defecation, the pelting of stones, obviously to us seems strange. It seems foreign. It is strange and foreign to us. But back then, very popular, and back then, also as per the Gemara in Yuma, they used to have a Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah. We don't have a Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah. See the Gemara in Yuma for a description of why we don't have we don't have a Yetzirah for this stuff. But the point of the Mishnah is that because this is the normal way of serving, Baal Peor defecating in front of it, Mercules throwing stones at it, since this is the Avodah, this is the way that it's served, therefore, it's going to be a capital punishment. My Echad HaOved. The first job of the Gemara is to explain the first expression of the Mishnah. If you serve an idol, what does that mean, service? Amar Rabbi Yirmiyahu Achikam, Echad Avodah Kedarka, Echad Mezavech, Mekatzer, Echad Menaseh, Echad Meshtachah, Afilu Shelo Kedarka. So the Gemara gives the Yisod, and that's the following. And we see this Yisod in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, the Gemara over here as well. The Yisod is that if there's an idol, and there's a normal way to serve the idol, like the examples that we gave at the end of the Mishnah, unusual, defecating and throwing stones, But if that's the normal way that this idol is served, then that's considered Ovid Avodah Zarah, and therefore subject to a capital punishment. And then the other activities of shechting an animal, offering it on the Mizbeach for the Avodah Zarah, bowing to the Avodah Zarah, Nisuch towards the Avodah Zarah. Since these are Avodahs that are done in the Beis HaMikdash, therefore, it's going to be a capital punishment by using these types of services towards the Avodah Zarah, even if these are not the normal ways that this Avodah Zarah is served. V'lechshon of Nami Zarek, the Gemara says, what about Zrika? What about sprinkling? Zarek Haino Manasseh. The Gemara says that sprinkling is one in the same as Nisach. As one of the same as Nisach. Dichsiv bal asich nischehem midam. Okay, mina hanimili. Okay, the Gemara now is going to go through the Pesukim and teach us how we know this. Meaning, what do we now know? That if you're Ovid Avodah Zarah in an unusual manner, but that's the unusual manner that's normally served, that is considered Avodah Zarah with a capital punishment. If I serve Avodah Zarah in the way that we normally treat karbanos, right, shchita, zrika, Nesach, right? It's interesting. Halacha, no, right? You know a little bit. So the Rashi says halacha, no. Not clear exactly why halacha, no. But that's a good point. So what the Gemara now is going to?
What about saying you are my God? How does that fit?
Excellent question. The Gemara is going to discuss that as well. Okay, so from this point now going forward, the Gemara is going to track where in the Torah we find all of these halachas embedded, and we'll start this tomorrow. And tomorrow we'll go through all the drushas of Torah and how we arrived at all the conclusions that we said in the Mishnah.